Lori, we are live this time, live together in person at eTourism Summit.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, that's right. We're meeting in person for the first time.
Live from Las Vegas.
We have co-hosted a podcast now for what, 6, 7 months?
I think we're on number 13. Are we? I don't know.
Yep. So now let's do six. Yep. 6.5 months is about where we're at right now.
Very good.
We're finally meeting together for the first time. Isn't that funny? Well, we've got a great guest today.
Oh, indeed. And in fact, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. But now, because we're here in Las Vegas during the eTourism Summit and the IPW, we're lucky enough to be able to sit down in person with Amir Aylon from Longwoods International.
Yes, Amir, it's really good to have you today, and we're excited to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me here. It's great to be here in person with everyone. Yeah, just a euphoria.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about that, I guess. You guys, Longwoods International, I'd love to have you give me an overview of who you are and why you're so critical to the industry, because you are.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, Longwoods International, we are a market research consultancy. We specialize in the travel and tourism industry. About 97% of our clients are in the industry. We work with over 150 different clients, small destinations, large destinations, national tourism boards, and do work in about a dozen countries. All survey research and consulting, of course. And, you know, really, we've been doing this for about 43 years. We have been in tourism all but the first 4 or 5 years. And everything we do revolves around travel and tourism and getting answers to the key questions. Whether they're visitor studies, who's coming, what are they doing, what are they paying, destination image, advertising effectiveness. And the last few years, we've been getting into a lot of sentiment research, which has been law of unintended consequences. We started doing some groundbreaking work in this a few years ago, and lo and behold, a pandemic hits, and sentiment has probably become one of the most important KPIs right now as we get through into recovery.
It was really interesting, Amir, that you just said that, because I was there when you presented the first resident sentiment survey. And I mean, the idea was a bit mind-blowing for everybody at that time because it was just pre-pandemic. And you guys presented research that said, hey, we've decided to ask people who live in destinations, how do they feel about visitors coming to their destination? How do they perceive that? Do they understand that the dollars those people bring in bring their taxes down and, you know, all these kind of things? And we thought, wow, that's super interesting. Then, boom, pandemic, and the resident sentiment becomes front and center to everything that that has happened since.
Yeah, the residents are an important component, and then we've added this layer of traveler sentiment through the pandemic. And so I remember it vividly, February 27th of 2020, I'm just on stage at the Wyoming Governor's Conference in Cheyenne, Wyoming, presenting on resident sentiment, and I always put my phone on silent, but I feel it buzzing like crazy as I'm talking. And I get off the stage and it's still buzzing. And I pull it up there. Well, it's my office constantly texting me, showing all these news clips. The words community spread were uttered, right? Game changer. So I had to fly back to, I had to drive back down to Denver and fly back to Columbus, Ohio, which is our U.S. headquarters. And our team was gathering, and about 48 hours later for our annual planning retreat. Just, you know, timing is everything. And I'm sitting there in the airport waiting to board my plane. And I'm saying, okay, we're reworking the agenda. The first 3 hours is going to be talking about this community spread thing with this thing called COVID-19. And I'm asking you all to think about one question. How is this going to change the industry? And what does the industry need that they don't have right now? And so we walked in 2 days later into the room, and, you know, always hire people who are smarter than yourself. That's the great thing. I'm blessed with a wonderful team. And they came in, and they had basically the outline of our first travel sentiment in light of the pandemic study ready to go. We spent a couple hours on it. We approved it. And a week later, we fielded the first results, which you've been receiving ever since. And our mantra was, we are now helpers for the industry. It's not about selling market research and all that. We are helpers to the industry. So we've made this available, and I want to thank our partners at Miles Partnership because they came on board about the third or fourth wave of the survey because they saw what we were doing and knew that it obviously takes some resources to sustain this. You know, we have been doing this absolutely free for the industry for a year and a half now. And, of course, we thought it would be a, you know, 5 month, 6 month project. You know, oh, we'll do about 10 or 12 waves of this thing. It'll be interesting. We'll learn some good things. There'll be a fun white paper one day to produce or something like that. And here we are 18 months later, and every 2 weeks, and just this morning released Wave 46.
So that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because I'm so fascinated that you got into the sentiment research that you were doing prior to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I've watched a lot of your webinars and stuff like that you guys have done, in fact, in conjunction with Connect Travel and eTourism Summit. And I want to know what has changed since that original sentiment analysis that you guys were doing prior to the pandemic.
Yep.
Compared to what you're seeing now, and what changes are starting to look permanent?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, pre-pandemic, we were looking mostly at the residents, and that was a huge mindset shift for us, because for almost 40 years, we were talking to travelers. And then, as Lori said, you know, we had to talk, you know, I'll say, well, how do locals feel about all this? And we gained some great insights. And again, it was a national study, and there were regional differences. But we'll be releasing. We just came out of the field with our fifth annual resident study. We released at the Destinations International Advocacy Summit in November or October. But the thing that really surprised us wasn't the fact that the general public, most residents in your community, are either super supportive behind tourism. On general issues, generally, you know, the key issues, people are generally supportive, or that there's a lot of naysayers. There really aren't that many naysayers. But what really surprised us is that on key issues of tourism's contribution to my community and my quality of life, most residents are just simply ambivalent. Just don't know. Don't have information. I don't know. You know, one way or the other. And that's a dangerous thing, because when times are good, okay, fine, nobody's got a problem. But when times are bad and communities are competing for scarce resources and trying to figure out priorities, if tourism is not seen as a critical part of my local economy, my local community, but the fabric of who we are, then okay, we're going to be left out, left behind, and shut down. So that really was kind of an interesting thing. So we started looking at that. But you know, when the pandemic hit, and we're talking to travelers, and we talk to these travelers as residents too, one of the most interesting things we've learned now is, even though the vaccine's out there, you know, and of course we've had these surges now. We're, you know, in the Delta surge. Hopefully we're coming towards the over the hump part here very soon with the Delta surge. But, you know, while we're all excited about being able to travel again and getting out and about so forth, the residents are a little more leery. The data we should release this morning, Wave 46, only 47% of residents feel good about bringing their visitors back in the community. Some communities, it's about they don't want them spreading whatever new variant is in town. But for most of them, it's if they get sick while they're here, we don't have the resources. We're a small town. We're a small community. Maybe our hospital only has X amount of beds. Well, I want those beds for me, not for, you know, people that, you know, don't pay taxes in my community, you know, but they do pay taxes because they're spending in your community, you know, but the residents don't see it that way, right, many times. So it's kind of interesting. So we've learned that. But the other thing, probably the most telling thing that really got us excited is people don't always do what they say they're going to do. We have an old joke in research. If you really want to find out what people think, don't ask them directly. There, we used to do some consumer products work for a certain cereal manufacturer years ago that, you know, rhymes with Elogs. But we were doing some focus group with soccer moms, and they had a new cereal concept. They wanted to check out with the moms. They're talking to moms. They say, "Hey, moms, what is the most important thing in making a decision of what brand of cereal you put in your shopping cart?" What do you think the mom said?
They said something about low sugar or healthy.
Nutrition, exactly. Every mom to a T. So then we say, well, what's the latest brand of cereal you put into the shopping cart? Every mom gets red in the face, right? Because it's Cocoa Krispies and Fruit Loops and Sugary Snaps and, you know, all that good stuff. So we say, okay, wait. You told us one thing, you did the other. Why? Well, that's because that's what my kid will eat. That's what was important. My kid will eat something before they leave for school in the morning. So same thing with travel. Typically, you know, sentiment research is not necessarily a new thing, but the way we focus it has been. But typically when you're talking to travelers and consumers, you know, they'll tell, sometimes they give you the answer they think you want to get, right? So you have to kind of come about it from different angles and so forth and that. But what we've seen is since the pandemic happened, American travelers, when they tell us, I'm thinking about this, I want to do that. I'm going to go to the great outdoors instead of cities. I'm going to go visit friends and family first when I can finally get out again. I'm going to take my extended family with me instead of just going with my wife or my wife and kids. And that they actually followed up and did what they would say. The correlation, they literally did everything they told us they were going to do. And we've never observed that. In all the years of doing research, we've never observed a convergence of sentiment and actual behavior to the same degree that we've seen now.
Why do you think that is? Yeah, I'm curious. Why is that?
You know what? We were honest with ourselves. Think about this. The you get in the psyche of the traveler, the consumer. You know, this pandemic shook us all to the core, and we were just all brutally honest. People had time to talk. People had time to think. People had time to connect via Zoom, virtually, and so forth. So, you know, we're coming out there in the field, and we're saying, well, what's the first thing you're going to do when you get out there? You know what? I'm going to see my grandma. I have missed her 80th birthday. I have missed weddings, bar mitzvahs, holidays, whatever these things are. I want to see my family, or I want to see my friends, how are you going to travel in there? Yeah, you know what? I don't want to get on a plane. That sounds like a germ factory to me. I'm going to drive. I don't care if it's a 14-hour drive. I'm going to drive because I cleaned my car. I know who's been in my car. Those are the types of things they were telling us until a level of degree that they weren't open and honest about it before. You really had to prod before. People want to talk. They want to tell us these things now.
What do you think is going to happen? Not just what you think, but what do they tell us is going to happen? I mean, what are we now? September? Yeah. We're only September. But it's not too soon for people to start thinking, what about Thanksgiving and what about Christmas? So what, I mean, this is our second go at having a holiday under this pandemic. Yeah. What are people going to do?
Well, so I'll tell you that based on data as it is and the state of the pandemic as it is right now, because, you know, every time we say this, something else, a new variant comes up or something else happens in there. But all things being equal, it looks pretty good right now. We're seeing a high volume of American travelers. 90% of them are telling us they have travel plans to go somewhere in the next 6 months. That takes us through the holiday season into early next year. So we're seeing that holiday travel is going to be really good. The other thing that we know is that the Delta variant, though, has had an impact on their travel planning. One out of three travelers has told us they have postponed a trip they had planned for now into later this fall or into early next year in there. So again, if we get over the hump with Delta pretty quickly, I think that bodes well. But, you know, you've already heard about the next variant that's, you know, starting to brew out there, and we don't know what that might have an impact or not, and so forth. But I think the intent is there, the pent-up demand is there. And then the interesting thing is, this is one pattern we've learned that's been constant. It's the beginning of this crisis, which has separated this crisis for the industry from all the past crises, is when we ask people what are all the key factors that would keep them from planning their next trip, when we ask the financial question, one's personal financial situation, that it has always been low. Less than 1 in 5 American travelers tell us, and they've told us this consistently through the whole pandemic, that their financial situation would impact their decision and how they travel there. So again, this is different because this is a health crisis first and an economic one second. So everybody who's out there putting out fire sales and discounts to get there, you can't discount your way into this recovery. It won't work, right? So that's been a real interesting telling thing. The pent-up demand is there. It's just that people kept running into the wall of fear of the pandemic.
Well, that's fascinating because it also means you can believe that, right? They're telling you that, and you can actually believe it instead of saying, okay, what do they really believe? Yeah. I'm curious. In fact, we were talking right before we started recording here. You talked about some of the concerns that you have about the way the industry is responding to the progress of the pandemic compared to the traveler needs. There's a gap being created. I'd love to hear what you're seeing.
Yeah, well, you know, first and foremost, obviously, we have a workforce issue. Now, many other industries across this country have a workforce issue as well. But, you know, here in the tourism and hospitality industry, we've definitely, you know, depending where you are and where you live in that, you see it. You know, restaurants can't hire staff. Hotels can't get housekeepers. You know, all these things, especially on the front lines of our industry, which are, you know, very important touch points with the traveler, we're under-resourced right now. And that's a problem because the traveler expectation is actually high. This week's research we actually shared, we've been asking through the summer and now into the fall season, the question of, you know, do you expect your next trip same, higher, lower level of customer satisfaction? Well, about half the travelers said about the same, but one-third of American travelers told us we expect a higher level of service than the travel that I took pre-pandemic. You know why? They've been fantasizing about this trip. They've been wanting to, so they're building this up. Well, we under-delivered. I can tell you that when we asked them after their travels, only a quarter said they received a higher level. And unfortunately, more people said they received lower service than they received better service. But half still said it was about the same. And we think those numbers are generous because, quite frankly, those first trips, that beach vacation or whatever it is that you ran out to, you didn't care. You just wanted to go, and people turned the blind eye that they had to wait 30 minutes for a table at the restaurant, or that housekeeping never showed up that day, or, you know, whatever it was that, you know, in there. So we think they won't be generous. But the other thing that really concerns us is, you know, the traveler and the consumer in general has been reconditioned. There's a couple new expectations that the traveler didn't have pre-pandemic, and I think they're going to be around with them through and beyond the pandemic. First one is the expectation of flexibility. You know, what happened when, you know, the bottom fell out, when we went into shutdown? The airlines and the hotels immediately can't, you know, no change fees, no cancellation fees. Those 48-hour cancellation policies went out the window. You change last minute, not a problem. We'll rebook you for something else. You know, even the meetings and convention side, you know, the cancel meeting, let's rebook you for when you think it's going to work out for you. We'll make it happen. We became very, very flexible with our customers. And guess what? Customers are used to that. But you see some brands are now trying to those restrictions are starting to creep back in. You know, some airlines are already charging for change fees again. Some of those cancel. I've seen a couple of hotel reservations I've made. I've gotten the email afterwards going, yeah, you know, if you cancel, you know, we're going to charge your card for the 48 hours. I think the consumer moving forward is going to be very loyal to those brands that continue to offer flexibility, and they're going to gravitate to those brands. The other thing about it that we've seen with the consumer is our consumer now has an expectation of clarity. And what I mean by that is we've been living in a year of chaos when it comes to around the whole health and safety issue on this. Now, you know, obviously it's very politicized, it's very polarizing, and I don't care which side of the coin you're on, but we can all agree on one thing, is that communication and the rules of engagement from city to city, from state to state, from business to business have varied. Yeah. And there's often been, you know, mixed messages coming from various levels of government or other trusted authorities, and even some of the healthcare officials themselves, right? So you've been following this, and the consumer gets frustrated when there's lack of clarity. Now, our industry did a good job, a great job initially. I mean, there was barely any destination marketing organization's website or hotel's website or airline's website you can go to that didn't clearly tell you, here are the rules of engagement. When you come to our property, you can expect this. Here's what you can expect from us, and here's what we can expect from you. And that's great. But you know what? As I surf the web right now on some of our industry sites, and you see that stuff now getting lower and lower on the website or off to the side and so forth. But the travelers are all telling us, and we asked these questions again just recently, they want to know what the rules are. It doesn't matter whether they want to wear masks, they don't want to wear masks, or they're pro-vaccine or anti-vaccine or whatever. They just want to know. Because they've lost faith in a lot of the official authorities, we have a great opportunity right now to be that authority for, you know, we shouldn't take the responsibility for being health authorities, but we can become that point of clarity and a trusted source. And again, the traveler is going to gravitate to those brands that offer that clarity to them.
Yeah, good point. It's true. Everything you said is just resonates, you know, beautifully. But I think this last point about people don't embrace confusion is a really important one. And I think we feel it now. I mean, a lot of people here are saying, this is my first time that I've traveled since, you know, for a year and a half.
Right.
And talking about the experiences that they've had. And this thing about clarity just keeps coming up. I mean, in my own hotel, I can't figure out if I'm paying for Wi-Fi, I'm not paying for Wi-Fi. Does it work? Does it not work? It doesn't want to download anything. And for me, the Wi-Fi is like air.
Yes.
I mean, you know, got to have it. It's more important than legroom on the airplane. I want to ask you about two. We've been talking mostly leisure. I just wanted to ask you any thoughts about meeting, convention, business travel, sure. And any thoughts on the international market coming back?
Yeah, no, both great questions. So let's talk about business travel first. You know, business travel was starting to come back before Delta hit us with full force. The data I was seeing was we got back to about 40 to 45% of pre-pandemic levels. It was pretty good, but then it's ebbed off again as Delta. I think once we get through the Delta variant, if there's no, you know, if the next variant isn't as impactful, let's say, we'll probably see a good return in early 22 there, but really it's more of a liability thing where the corporate travel planners are saying, you know, don't go, don't go. And remember a lot of, you all saw the news reports of people say, oh, business travel will never be back. That's a bunch of bull, because if I'm running a business, as soon as my competitor's calling on my clients in person, I'm going to call on them in person. And that's what's going to happen. Business travel will be back. But again, it's going to be victim to the waves of surges, right? The thing about meetings and conventions, you know, when you talk to a lot of destinations right now, they've seen good rebookings. Their 2023s, 24s, and 25s are looking very strong. They're ahead because they were able to rebook a lot or shift a lot of that. I think that demand is there. Things are happening. Look, we're meeting here. And there's a lot of great precautions happening here, and people are doing, the best they can, with these circumstances. I've been on the road 8 out of the last 9 weeks, and I've attended many conferences and meetings and that. It can happen safely. It's a good thing. And I think that there's going to be that click and comfort level is going to happen sometime next year, too. I'm fully confident of that. International travel is the sticky one right now. Yesterday, we had a great announcement from the White House. That's fantastic that, we're lifting the restrictions effective November 1st for, 33 countries? There's from 33 countries. Really exciting. But I don't think the expectation should be that on November 1st, all of a sudden, every inbound plane is going to be full. And plus, you also have logistical challenges, right? I mean, you have it's the question of lift. You know, the airlines have all here in the U.S., the domestic carriers that had a lot of international routes were, Delta, American, United, et cetera, they were all repositioning their aircraft. You know, I'm flying wide bodies from the East Coast now to L.A., that we're going overseas, a year and a half ago in there. They've got to repossession these. They've got to beef up their crews. You know, there's a whole logistical support that goes with this. So the airline, the lift schedule, this volume of lift is going to lag behind a little bit. So that's got to play catch up. Mm-hmm. And then, you've got about 19 million Americans that this past year typically would have gone abroad, outbound from the U.S. abroad, and they stayed here. And they've discovered new destinations. And maybe they're going to give up some of their international wanderlust. But now, data shows that there's a lot of Americans that are booking overseas as soon as they can, but there's a lot. There's one-third of them, of travelers, said, I'm going to stay domestic. So now with these new international visitors coming in, and of course, there's going to be competition. It's always been on a global scale. Are the international visitors going to be competing with locals domestic travelers for Yellowstone, for Disney, for all these other attractions, even beyond the gateways?
So back to over tourism.
It could be right. We're gonna have to watch this play out a little bit. I don't think it's gonna be that bad, but I think you're gonna see some surprising new markets of opportunity in the U.S. for the international market. I think you'll see them coming to some of the traditional places where we've seen before, but I also think you're gonna see a few new places showing up on the hit list, which are gonna surprise some people in there. And it's gonna have to kind of balance itself out over the next year or two.
Yeah,
it'll be fun to watch.
Amir, I've got my final question, and then Lori's probably going to have one final question for you, too. My question for you is going back to the clarity comment that you made, because I think that's fascinating. The data clearly shows that confusion is a real problem, whether it's for the business travelers or the leisure travelers. So, Mike, it's funny, I almost said leisure because I'm so used to hearing Lori say it that I had to totally catch myself. Pretty soon this whole thing's going to be in an accent.
It's going to be a British show.
I'm excited.
Listen,
yeah.
I have a whole Canadian office, and I say process all the time.
Me too.
That's great. But going back to the clarity comment, knowing that the travelers need this, mm-hmm. knowing that they're not getting it from the highest source, or at least in their opinion, the highest source, right? What an opportunity for destinations to be, and we're talking about a community shared value. I'm going to map it back to what Destinations International has taken the lead on. Every DMO needs to be a community shared value. If you are the microphone of clarity for your destination, what an opportunity to generate the trust that these travelers are desperately looking for.
I couldn't agree more. Look over the past year and a half when the pandemic hit. A lot of residents were introduced to their DMO the very first time, right? Because all of a sudden it was the DMO that stepped up and said, hey, here's what businesses are open. Here's where you can get carryout food. Here's where food banks are running. Here's what, whatever needed to happen. Those DMOs stepped up. And so they all of a sudden there's increased awareness of my local DMO. There's that community value sense that started to emerge. And now they should ride this wave, and they need to keep building on it. Absolutely.
There are other ones who are even publishing a job bank that goes beyond, the jobs they've got at the Bureau, but also what jobs there are in the community.
Oh, yeah.
And so they become the go-to for that consolidation. That's brilliant.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there needs to be, every destination marketing organization in the U.S., in their business plan, in their communication plan, their engagement plans, at this point needs to have a resident engagement component to that plan.
So we'll get into that because we're going to see more and more community manager jobs within the DMO. I don't know if they'll be called that or something else, but that's the role, and we never had it before.
And I am seeing those start to pop up around the country. Yeah.
Well, thanks very much, Amir. I don't have a final question. I think you've answered all of mine and more.
Oh, no.
You know, we're on wave 46, and I hope we don't get too many more waves. But you are the MVP of the pandemic, because keeping everybody informed and doing it, you know, for free. And I've been putting out the word as you give it to me as often as possible in the travel vertical, because it's just, you know, what a resource.
Where would
we be without that map?
Oh, well, thank you. You know, it's a team effort. I've been blessed in working a lot of great organizations throughout my career, and I've never been more proud of a team than how this team has fared over the past year and a half as we've pulled this through. And I mean, it is not easy every couple of weeks to get a full study, a national study, in and out the door published.
I can't imagine.
No, but it's great. But thank you very much. And thank you, Lori, for helping put the word out on a regular basis.
My pleasure. Thank you, Amir.
And Amir, if people want to learn more and they want to get access to the reports that you're putting out and make sure that they're following the latest data, what do they need to do?
Very simple. It's longwoodsinternational.com/COVID-19.
Okay. Yeah. Amir, thanks so much. We really enjoyed it today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.